Can you grab Dan and introduce this next one?
Julie's grabbing him.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, thanks. Okay, the next thing on the agenda is Dana is going to explain to us the application timeline, and she will be right in. Are you going to talk about the committee meeting yesterday during your report?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yep. Can you copy me?
I got my pretzels off the door.
Okay.
Sorry. I'm always sniffling. And see, no one put chocolate out for me today.
Well, just get one of Betty's.
Look, Betty's for
Laban. We're going to be there.
Betty's not one you should take the chocolate.
That's right. That's right.
You get smacked.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you were ready.
All right. So you have in your folder, you should have a copy of a draft application cycle timeline. Pursuant to the state board regs and our charter school law, we're proposing that you all adopt or adopt the following deadlines for submission. This would apply to new charter applications. It exempts transfer applications and replication applications. We're wanting those to be able to be submitted to you all at any time. This is strictly addressing new applications. As you all know, there has to be a letter of intent from the applicant 90 days prior to submitting the application. The application itself would have, the letter of intent would have to be submitted on or before November 3rd to us, at least 2 years prior, 2 years prior to the year in which the applicant intends to open. The application must be submitted on February 1 of the calendar year. So, for example, a school that wants to open in August of 2018 would submit its letter of intent to us on or before November 3rd of 2016, then its application on February 1st of 17. And that we do not want to accept early applications. We want this to be a February 1st.
Line in the sand.
Yes, drawing that line, bright line. And then, of course, we provide for situations where November 3rd or February 1st, either of those dates fall on a weekend holiday or any other day that the district office may be closed. It would be just, the due date would be extended to the next work day. You all are required, as everyone here knows, to make a decision on any submitted application within 90 days. And we want to carve out an exception to this, saying that you all are not going to accept any application unless the potential applicant demonstrates a compelling need. And that compelling need would be decided or determined solely at your discretion. We did provide in the policy need, meaning that the decision for you all not to accept this application outside the application deadline cycle would likely result in a lost opportunity to open a school where a great need for that school exists. So we have broad enough language there for you all to work with. There are some suggestions that we've spoken about recently that we might want to add a qualifier, but I'd like to see your questions first and then talk to you a little bit about a suggestion to maybe narrow the charter school. We're really wanting, obviously, as an organization, and to fulfill our organization's mission and the purpose of the Charter Schools Act to get quality schools. So maybe a qualifier before charter school in that last sentence, lost opportunity to open a charter school. Obviously, we don't want opportunities provided to applicants that are not, don't have the capacity to open or don't intend to open a quality charter school. Even if there's a great need in the community, it's not going to meet the need.
And so you're saying where handwritten quality has been inserted there, are you saying that that would need to be an amendment to this, or is that already in this?
It would need to be added to this.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the rationale there is that the discretion gets broadened. It's not just about needing the community, which I think any prospective operator in our state could likely make the case for need in the community.
Right.
So I think that just gives the board consideration around the quality of the applicant
right.
that's being
right.
stood up, and I think that's important.
And the spirit behind this is really we don't want to delay or discourage an applicant that does demonstrate, you know, and I'm thinking, I'm just giving my legal, this background, on its face, this is an applicant, this is a proposal that really speaks to capacity and quality. And so we wouldn't want to discourage or delay by drawing this bright line for everybody. If we carve out an exception, we could allow those folks that come in and they have a facility, they're ready to go, and provide, meet a need in an area that, as an organization, we know there needs to be charter proposals. I think that would go a long way to fulfilling our mission.
Okay, can I hear a motion?
Would this be for first readings of this policy?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I move approval of first reading for the draft regarding the application cycle timeline.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Okay, now, discussion, questions?
I guess I feel uncomfortable with this, with it being first reading. I just state this as a point of view at this point. Because we could do what this does without this policy. All we'd have to do is set aside the rule. The board can set aside any rule as long as it doesn't violate statute. Is that not correct? So I don't understand the need for it. First, that's one objection, when we already have the authority to do that. The second concern is we're adding subjectivity on top of subjectivity, because the issue of compelling need, and I think Elliot hit it right on the head, not to make my case, but I think he makes my case in something he said. This issue of compelling need all depends on perspective.
Sure.
Every applicant that comes before us makes a case for compelling need. And so that language, to me, this is so subjective to start with, and it seems as though we're adding subjectivity on top of subjectivity. And then the issue of quality, the whole purpose for the hearing is to establish quality. And so that should be present irrespective of the deadline. Everybody should meet that test. It seems to be bad policy. I guess that's to create a policy to do something you already have the authority to do. And then my last point is, we're the ones that wanted this deadline. We wanted a deadline, right? Mm-hmm. We lobbied for it.
Yeah, that's right.
The rolling application.
We did not want the rolling application.
That's right.
And for clarification, the way the statute or the reg reads, it's on or before. So the application cycle timeline draft originated with the intent to draw that bright line, which is on February 1st. So that would accomplish that, and that's what we all want. I know the staff and I want that bright line February 1st. When we looked at it, are there some circumstances that may warrant us being a little flexible in certain cases? So this would at least, I would definitely request that you all seriously consider at least the timeline that does draw that bright line on February 1st versus on or before, because on or before February 1st means the day after would be before February 1st of the following year, could be March, April. It makes obviously the work that you have as being the high stakes decision makers very difficult to manage, because you're having to constantly make sure you have a quorum throughout the year, because we're not going to be able to, that 90-day timeline has not changed.
Well, I have a question. And you obviously looked at the statute, but just to make sure, I had always assumed that meant sometime between January the 1st and February the 1st. That it was on or before that year. You're saying that's not the case.
And I'm looking over at council, because we've had lots of folks outside the agency interpret it differently, and we have applicants that will do that.
That's that is
that was the intent, I believe, of the statute, and I think that's how it should be read. We have some people that are reading it differently, and so this would clarify that. The statute also gives the sponsor flexibility within that time frame to create its own timelines, as long as it's on or before February 1. And so that's what this policy would do, is it would establish that for us, that means on February 1, which is within the parameters of the statute and within the sponsor's authority to create its own timeline.
Which will mean you all are making those high-stakes decisions during the spring versus
the summer.
It
seems like a strange reading of that to me.
I think people read to their
the way they wanted to read.
Sure.
Right.
Okay, but
it maybe you can see sort of the reading, but it's if some others have read it to me within a school year, so R1 before February 1, beginning of August of the school year before, and et cetera. I think this just clarifies it, because the sponsor does have the authority to create its own.
Okay. So then another question. Because, Ron, I'm not totally unsympathetic with what you're saying. In fact, in the discussions that went around, I think this kind of verifies some of the discussions Elliot and I've had. I've said, you know, I know the board doesn't want to open this thing up. I know we don't want it. What I think I said was, I am confident that I know the will of the board well enough. No, we just don't want to open it up. But if we need to define for sure that we aren't talking about from February the 2nd on, which just seems like to me a bizarre reading of this.
Right.
That somebody could come up on February 2nd and say, well, this is before. Well, I mean,
next
it's
January.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's.
Well, and if you think of just recent past, we did have the cycle back in June. I think it might have been June 1st, June 15th, I can't remember, but that cycle that was set. We had applicants, as you all know, that submitted, did not get a recommendation, either from staff and then decided to withdraw, or went to the board and did not get an approval recommendation. And then, you know, went to our former superintendent and asked to resubmit and did not want to wait till February. So this really goes a long way to obviously put an end to that practice, which I think we all found very difficult to manage, and then philosophically had a hard time, you know, because you know the rules up front. You know it's February 1st coming into this next cycle. And I really love the idea, and I don't know of any authorizer, you know, especially a quality authorizer, that doesn't set a specific timeline. And of course, the board, at its discretion, I have seen, and we've spoken about this, Don, I believe it, we've spoken about it in open session. There are authorizers who will, staff that will bring to the board a proposal to maybe in a very rare situation, there's a very high demand for charter schools. And there's some maybe that, you know, we want to request in order to manage the work that we add a cycle, but it's specific for this year, that kind of thing. We want a fall cycle in addition to a spring cycle, which I view this as kind of the spring cycle. So that does happen. I do think it's unusual not to have a drop-dead date. I'm definitely a fan of the drop-dead February 1 date.
Well, Ron, I think that a policy that simply said the date for applications is February 1st would not then bother any of the things that are bothering you.
Right.
Is that right?
Right. Defining the law or defining this is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
To modify it, to open the door where we're trying to close, and then to support it by these subjective considerations, mm-hmm. is what's problematic to me.
Right.
And if I could follow up on what Ron said, the wording puts responsibility for determining whether or not there is a compelling need on this body. That would be like having an application hearing.
Right, exactly.
You know, would be having a hearing before the hearing.
That's what
if we do, you know, our due diligence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would just be a duplication of effort.
Okay, so.
And now I don't have any problems, you know, as you two gentlemen don't, with the drop dead date.
Right.
That's fine with me. a question is, why November 3rd instead of November 1? I mean, we usually go on either the first day or the last day of the month.
It's 90 days.
Oh, that's right.
Because of February.
Yeah, sorry.
Just for clarification on that, the reason the dates were in there is that what we try to do is to make the policy helpful to applicants by the dates that were known, putting them in as dates instead of saying 90 days before.
Right.
Okay.
We didn't want to make people do math they didn't have to do.
Well, and I obviously didn't do it in my head, so I apologize. One additional question, the last sentence in the first paragraph talks about, you know, this not applying to replications or expansions of existing charter schools. Does it apply to traditional public schools who ask to transfer, charter schools under another authorizer who ask to transfer, private schools who ask to become charter schools?
The private and the, our attorney here, but private and public conversions would fall under that new charter application.
Okay. Right.
This would be like Felton Lab transfer
okay.
application, what we had in the past, Fox Creek.
Right.
You know, what we may have in the future, given SC State situation.
Okay, thank you. That clarifies.
Does that need to be, should that be explicitly stated?
Don't think so.
Okay.
We'll talk for the
policy council. Usually not that specific, but I just wanted to get an idea for myself.
Okay.
The rule is if you guys have a question about it, it's just not clear enough. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's. I guess that's what I was thinking. We're debating it.
We can. That's an easy fix.
Yeah. Right. It is. Go ahead.
I had a question, and I guess it's really to Elliot because he mentioned the. That having a policy like this, and then you mentioned that as you are out talking to charter operators that are looking at South Carolina, North Carolina, other states, mm-hmm. so that we wouldn't lose an opportunity. Talk about that for a minute.
Okay.
How this would impact lost mm-hmm. opportunity in mm-hmm. And my scenario would be in a very rural area where you could get a top-notch operator to mm-hmm. come in on.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think for me, the way I think about this is, like, do you want the door wide open? Do you want the door closed, but you can open it? Or do you want the door, like, closed and locked, right? And I think right now there's some ambiguity, maybe not in this room, but outside this room, as to what, you know, which door is it mm-hmm. right now? And I actually would lean towards, like, the door's closed and locked, or the door is closed, but it can be opened under rare circumstances, versus just open floodgates. In ASD, we had a tight timeline. You know, if you apply to Harvard, there's a deadline. I just think, you know, most of the great operators, in fact, we've been on the phone with Donna and Mary with a great operator who just got outstanding results in Louisiana who's thinking about coming into South Carolina. They're 9 months away from an LOI, and they're already talking to us about visiting their state, and they're coming here. So most of them are going
to
do that the right way. I do think, and maybe Ron, what you're saying is the current policy allows the board to deviate from that in under, you know, certain circumstances. And if that's okay, then you're right. Maybe we don't need this, but there will be cases where just exigent circumstances, right, where during the course of a year outside of an existing timeline, either some extraordinary need or opportunity comes up on the demand side in our state, and or we've got a CMO that's really high quality, that's engaged, and for some reason they're a month out of timeline or 2 months out of timeline, and they're making a decision between our state and a few others, and they have an opportunity, let's say, with a facility that a philanthropist has offered them, just not knowing what our timeline is, and they say, well, hey, we've got a chance to come in to your state and do this. We have a building, but there's another offer on that property, or we also have Chicago and LA who want us to go there, and they're going to allow us to open our first school next fall. We notice we're 2 weeks outside of your application deadline. Can we still apply? I don't want us to be so rigid as to not allow ourselves that opportunity, our kids that opportunity, should it come to us. And so that is, you know, and another thing is I've already got questions from people about our timeline and about these resubmissions, what could we submit later in the year? And I do just think the board having a very clear position on this, since you really own the process, that either clarifies the existing policy or adds further clarification to the circumstances under which an application would be accepted outside of that existing timeline would be really helpful. But I would just say that there will be opportunities where we've got a really high quality operator who wants to come in, and there's a combination of factors that have created an opportunity that doesn't fall cleanly in our timeline, and I think we're going to want to seize on that because it would be good for kids. So I just want to make sure that, I mean, my recommendation would be let's make sure we allow for that. But, like, to me, the 99% rule is we've got a deadline, and that's what people are going to follow. And it will take an extra discussion that I think should come to this board before a decision is made to hear someone outside of that timeline. I don't think we should just be deciding that and bringing it to you throughout the year and you hear them. So,
Ron, let me ask you, what you're saying, Ron, is that since the board really can do whatever it wants to do, that we can always suspend a policy?
Yes, and it requires rigid consideration to suspend, because there's a fine line between violating policy.
Right.
But
well, it would take a vote to suspend the policy.
And it takes these ambiguities, these objective ambiguities out, you know, compelling need, quality charter. I don't know if it's called quality charter yet, because we just...
Well, we would have to have Kathleen's a potential hearing. Yeah.
Well, what I'm saying is, here's what I'm trying to figure out, because when Elliot first ran this by me, I was more where you are than this is. But so let's think through it, though. Let's say Elliot then comes to us and says, okay, we've got a group here, and I think we need to hear them, even though it's out of cycle. We still have to decide on some subjective level, do we not, whether to suspend our policy.
Right, right. The burden of proof, the burden of presentation falls on the staff on that. And usually, now I haven't studied our bylaws, so I don't know, but usually to suspend the rules requires a higher vote.
Yeah, two-thirds.
Then
that's right.
This would.
That's right.
And so what you've done is you've maintained, we have, you know, it's interesting, drop dead, the term drop dead, that terminology really conveys something. Mm-hmm. So you still have a rigid framework. But you have the mechanism for addressing that 1 in 100 chance.
Right.
Because if it's like 10 in 100, then we've got a bad something wrong.
Well, let me ask you this, because what I'm trying to figure out, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think what I heard Elliot saying is that something that of course, he can always go to the bylaws, but that some statement by us that it is, while highly unusual, but there is a mechanism for hearing one that we think needs to be heard outside of our policy. So what if we, in order to give him a policy that he could refer to rather than our bylaws, what if we tighten this up and said, you know, some of the same stuff it says, but... And by 2/3 vote of the board.
But
does that
see? I think that's. I think it's problematic and unnecessary.
Okay.
That's the point. Why would we create a problem when we already? Why would we create a solution for which there is no problem?
May I? Just interject here.
Yes.
So I think the question I have is, when you say, why create a solution for which there is no problem? And I would 100% agree with that philosophy and work. When I think of Virtus First Choice and Camden, so I think the board hearing those applications late in the year, to me is something that, and it's not those applicants, but that to me is likely something that we might want to avoid this year or in future years. And so under the existing policy and approach, that happened without any previous discussion or insertion of policy that would get to exactly what you're saying, which is, wait, before we would do that outside of the timeline, we need a two-thirds vote to basically break our policy. The policy was essentially broken without that discussion. So when I'm just stepping in and seeing all of the activity around that late in the year, has me thinking, is it a policy issue that allows for that? Or is it more just pure staff discretion that we could bring operators to you throughout the year? And wanting to know the board's role specifically in that decision. Because I would agree, I mean, I think it would be great if you want to hear an operator outside of the scope of the timeline. I feel like we should bring that to you, we should make the case, and you should decide whether to do that. I don't think that's what happened just recently. So, and I don't know if that was just a product of not really being rooted in the existing policy or even thinking about it when that decision was made.
Well, to Don's point, though, of needing this in the policy for the benefit of the operator. There's dialogue between staff
exactly.
and the operator.
And all I'm trying to say is, what would that dialogue be? Would it be, well, hey, yeah, that sounds interesting. I'll have to talk the board into setting aside their policy on this, or I'll need a two-thirds vote. I mean, it's almost, you see what I'm saying? It's the same thing.
To me, the dialogue would be this is such, you're outside of policy. We have such a compelling need. I want to keep this alive. And then his responsibility is to get us to set aside.
Right.
To suspend the rules. So we would vote to suspend the policy.
Right.
And based on.
But that's still going to be.
That's a dangerous precedent to set. Yeah,
that's the only way
we can accomplish this is to suspend,
in fact,
as it comes up.
What this came down to in the discussions getting this to here, because the first go around, I thought way too loosey-goosey. And so we kept working with it. And I guess I came down on what you said. I would prefer, I think, although you might be pushing me another way, but that there'd be a mechanism, because it seems like, here's what I was trying to avoid, was lawsuits. What I didn't want was a lot of complaints. Us suspending them for one. Yes, suspending them for one, and then others say, wait, you suspended them.
Yes.
And I don't think there's any way around that, no matter how we do it, somebody's going to get mad that we did it for somebody and didn't do it for somebody else, it seems to me. And we're going to get complaints.
I'm sure going to be mad.
Right.
If I think I've got the solution for my community, and we had one in here recently.
Oh, yeah.
I have the solution for my community.
Mm-hmm.
You have a mechanism. Mm-hmm. And you apply it over here and you don't apply it to me. And I see my
right.
kids and the needs they have.
That's right.
And I'm not getting that same consideration.
But no matter how we do it, that's going to be the case.
Well, no, because, see, I hear something that I hadn't heard before. I'm hearing that this is a frequent need. Well, if that's the case, why do we have the time?
I don't think it's free.
Well, that's what I
have been said.
There have been some fairly numerous, the three that you mentioned
right off the top, but then also other groups have resubmitted and then withdrawn on tries number either two or three.
Mm-hmm.
We've had recent ones ask, well, can we resubmit
yep.
now? So I think it's just in the wake of these recent resubmissions, it's kind of opened the conversation.
Yeah,
But see, I have no problem saying no. The problem
I have is
saying no when my kids need me to say yes.
Right.
I mean, when there's a compelling child need, that I don't care really how mad everybody else gets.
I agree.
I'm, This is being taped. I didn't have statements like that. Take that.
Videotape.
That was Elliot talking.
He's throwing your voice, ventriloquist.
But I don't want to have an opportunity to save a child and not have the mechanism to save the child.
Right. Yes.
But I don't have a problem with saying no, even to people who have a strong track record and all these other things.
Right.
You know what the deadline is. Let's operate within the rule. But I've got a way to address when you come in and you say, you all have been on my case about not serving these communities, and I've got a chance to serve this community. Now put up or shut up, suspend the rules, or we send them back home.
Yeah.
I've got a question, and maybe this is more of a legal thing, and I understand and I appreciate what Ron is discussing, but is it a better practice for this board to me, suspending the rules is a higher threshold, and it's a more, maybe drastic is not the right word, but to me, it's more of a drastic measure.
It's more unusual.
Unusual, drastic, what you choose. Is it better not then to have a policy which clears the path to do what we would need to do than to suspend the rules, which is an unusual policy? I would rather go down the path of least resistance. Mm-hmm. What,
Don, do you want me to address that? I mean,
I'm glad
to address that. I think that's a good point. You know, the suspension of the policy is generally designed for the internal administration of the board. That's what that typically is there. Here, you guys are a little different than a normal board because you're implicating the statutory rights of a third party. So the suspension of the policy would be, in my view, a little bit, it would be appropriate, it would be okay, but it would be a little bit outside the scope of what it's initially designed for. I want to make sure we're clear about one thing. We talked a little bit earlier about, as long as it complied with the law, you guys can kind of do what you want with the policy, and that's true. But you got to remember that the law that applies in this case affects the rights of third parties, right, the applicants. And so baked into all of that discussion is the law that says that you guys cannot act in an arbitrary or capricious way. And in a situation like this where arbitrary and capricious is the standard upon which you would be judged upon by a third party, it is my view that it's helpful to have a recommendation that sets some standards for the basis for a decision to make an exception outside of a policy, for lack of a better term. I don't view this necessarily as setting aside a policy. I view it as being part of the policy, that there are circumstances under which an application could be heard outside the timeline. From a policy perspective, it would be entirely appropriate for you guys to have a policy that just says, we will not hear applications outside of the timeline, and then that would be okay. You could always set it aside, as Ron suggested, through the extraordinary step of two-thirds vote under the policy. I think that the difficulty there is that, you know, what is the standard that you're using? Because it's not known to people in advance what that is, you would be subject to questions about whether it was done arbitrarily or capriciously. If you did it in one case and said no in another, you want to be able to justify it. You can do that. All of that's fine. So, but what I'm saying is that what Ron is suggesting is fine. You can absolutely do what Ron is suggesting. It would be legally compliant. There'd be no problem with it. I think John makes a good point in that when you're dealing with outside people, it's helpful to have some basic parameters in the policy that says if you're going to apply outside the timeline, these are the considerations that we would take or that we would think about. I do think it's important to note, to address the question about whether the word quality goes in there, likely will result in a lost opportunity to open a quality charter school. We've gone back and forth on whether that word goes in there because we were concerned about exactly what you talked about. Does that open the door to a hearing on whether it's quality application before you have a hearing on whether it's quality application? The reason we put it right where it is because it follows a lost opportunity to open a quality charter school. So really all you're looking at there is, are you losing the opportunity for a charter school? Not whether the application itself is quality, because you wouldn't even have an application in front of you. You know, you're looking at the opportunity. So based on the information presented, you know, are they, you know, is it a group with capacity that suggests it can put together a quality application? Is it a, you know, a good concept? Is it, you know, those kinds of very basic, as Dana pointed out, the sort of legal term for that is the prima facie case for, you know, a quality application. I hope that answers your question, John. The answer is that there's no bright line answer to this. Everything you suggested are really good points. I think the board could do it in lots of different ways. As the lawyer that would have to defend it, I always feel better if I have a definite standard that we're working off of, even if it's subjective. Because in the law, compelling need means something. You know, judges know what that means. You know, we all kind of know what that means. It's sort of defined further here to put it in the context. But you are 100% right to say that there is element of subjectivity to that that would always be subject to attack. So how you want to handle it is really just a policy decision, how far you want to open the door. As Elliot pointed out, you know, using his analogy, you can close the door totally, you can keep the door wide open, but everywhere in between there, it's just a matter of how far you want to leave it cracked. You know, how hard is the lock? You know, you want to deadbolt it, or you just want to put the regular door lock on. So you guys can think about that. I think you're at first reading, and we don't have a huge agenda today. So I would encourage you to discuss this and decide at least conceptually how open you want to leave the door, so that we can work on getting the draft to do what it is you want to do. Because I think the most important thing is this. Number one is, we are not going to get the number of resubmission requests that we've gotten in the past, and we're not going to get the number of requests outside with the new reg and the new statute. The reason we kept getting those is because we were operating under the old statute, the old reg, that just the door was wide open. Right. We're not going to get that number anymore. At least that's my view. So that's number one. And number two is, whatever you come up with, it's important that follow it as closely as you can. What we don't want to have is situations where we come up with a policy and we are forever coming up with exceptions. Setting aside the policy looks like you're making, you're totally setting aside the policy instead of thinking through it. So if we want to go that way, I would just encourage you to think that it would be a very, very rare circumstance that we would set aside the policy and hear something out of time. This policy, if we're thinking about our analogy, leaves the door more open than setting aside the policy generally. Does that answer your question, John?
Yes.
My last two comments was, one, we were initially instructed to not consider the legal.
That's right, and I think we should.
But everything that was presented, when we're talking about arbitrary and capricious, then we bring it back and say, we got all these legal.
I agree.
I think
in terms of making a decision, we should not worry too much about that.
But, and then I would, what was my second point? Obviously, we're making this policy, we're considering this policy in its current form for the exception, to provide for the exceptional circumstance. And it's just usually bad policy to develop policy based on the exceptional circumstance. Because the fact of the matter is, the majority of the applications of this policy will be for not these folks that are standing waiting to come into South Carolina, but those folks that are already operating that are wanting to present applications to us outside the time frame. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, I'll stop there.
A couple comments. from practice, it's difficult to have a drop-dead date or a zero-tolerance policy. They usually make you look foolish because there's already life. Life is life. So I sort of try to stay away from that and give an opportunity, a way to open the door if it needs to be. I do think there needs to be clarification because I know people. People don't like no. They will interpret and look at things every way in the world to try to make it an issue. So having more clarity, I think, is wise. Saying, and this compelling thing, just saying, yeah, that area has a compelling reason to have a charter school. It's why I'm listening to you. But it certainly doesn't mean, just because I view this area as compelling, that you're going to get the charter.
Right.
It's just that I'm open. I'm not closed-minded. I am open that this area is in need. We've known it. But so you've met the threshold that the area is compelling, but it doesn't mean that you're going to get it. And I think quality is what we're after, not quantity, quality. And every time we can say that, that needs to be, because my issue is not this. My issue is listening to people who can't even meet the threshold of meeting the law of the state of South Carolina and having to listen to them. And then all upset because I didn't get it. And you haven't even met the simple threshold of meeting what the law of South Carolina is asking you to do in having a charter school. So we're already putting ourselves in that situation all the time to do that. So I think this just brings clarity to what you're trying to do. I think suspending the policy is dangerous, because if you have people who can't understand this and try to find holes in the February 1 deadline, you suspend the policy, and then the audience out here is trying to find, well, that's all they do. It's just any way it wants to be. So having some type of framework when you would consider it, I think, is in our best interest. And to me, I'm viewing this as, okay, I'm gonna hear this because I know Florence needs the charter school, but that doesn't mean you're going to get it.
Okay, but if I could just comment, remember, just needing one wouldn't meet this standard. It has to be that it needs one, and unless we did this, that opportunity to go, those people couldn't do it 6 months later.
Right.
And so it's not, we aren't looking at, is it compelling that they need a school? We're looking at, is it compelling on the basis of, it's going to be an opportunity missed?
Yes, exactly. Right. I'm with you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did somebody else raise a hand? Okay.
No, but I can.
I was going to raise mine too, just to make a suggestion.
Just a quick question. From a staff perspective, obviously you're going through multiple, God knows how many applications in a season. If this is enacted and it becomes policy, as far as from the staff perspective, making it, I don't want to use the word, I hesitate to use the word easy, because nothing's easy, streamlining your application process so that you can bring us my mind's going blank right now. When you make your staff recommendations, I know you've got X number of applications already backed up. As far as cleaning up your application process and getting things to us, how does this affect staff? Did I make any sense? From a staff perspective, how does this impact your office?
Well, one thing I know, it will go a long way as to prevent what I refer to internally as serial applicants. In terms of, and I think one thing, the suggestion I was going to make is that we could take this timeline and add, just to be very clear, that when we have have early applications will not be accepted, but we could also say applications, you get to essentially achieve something through language that says you get to apply once a year. That's very common, that an applicant, the same applicant group with the same proposal to meet the same need in the same community that was identified in one application does not come back that same year with the same proposal. I mean, I think we need to be very specific, because that, I think, was the genesis of a lot of this, was the serial applicants. If you have a high applicant, quality applicant, you're going to get the recommendation for approval from the staff, and more than likely, you all are hopefully on the same page at assessing quality. They're not going to come back the same year. It's for the folks that are getting the no. And we really want to send the message that no doesn't mean, as Joel Medley used to be at our department and then was at North Carolina, is now working elsewhere, used to say no, we're saying no, not now, not never. Okay. So it, I think it's very fair to an applicant to expect, if you don't get an approval this year, to wait for the next year. And I, you know, the research totally supports that it takes time, year, 2 years of planning out for this. And the group that Elliot mentioned earlier that is interested in coming here, is I was so amazed at the amount of work they've already done. And they're like, we're not applying this February. We'll be applying next February. But we're going to come to your hearings, and we want to come and meet with the department staff. And we want to look at the entire state, and we want to do focus groups. They're going to have, you know, I'm going to totally think they're going to have this very robust proposal. So I just wanted to add that I would like to see that clarity there, that when early applications are accepted and an application from the same group for the same proposal, whatever. From a staff perspective, we would love to see people respect the timeline. You have to, in any other context, you get a timeline and you work with it. We're talking about people who have, hoping to just put people, allow people into this charter space that have quality and capacity. So adherence to a timeline, knowing the timeline, vetting things, you know, going to the training, being very versed in what the timeline means, what the policy of the sponsor that you're considering applying to, what that means, goes to capacity. So I think we all appreciate it. I'll speak on behalf of Catherine, who's the project manager for this, that she looks forward to having. There was a version of this that Eric joked about being Dana's version, because it was really no exceptions. It's what's. However, I do see that we have this potential, if we're really going to change the landscape for charter authorizing and it really be a tool to transform lives, and Elliot speaks so eloquently to that, can speak to it so much better than I can, we want the high quality folks, and I'd hate to see that in any way, an unnecessary barrier be put in that high, whether it be an individual who has worked for a high quality operator that can do incredible things for areas that we've seen really need it, or a big group that's been doing it well. At one point we had in here, compelling need means that there a requirement that there be a proven track record, okay? So there is that in DC. Again, on its face, we're not just coming to you as a staff and saying, please consider this outside the cycle. Just on, it's not capricious. It's, we've got a proven operator, and we want to see those in the state. We want to see proven applicants. You've done it elsewhere. Come here. You've done it in another area of the state with another authorizer. Do you want to do something different, so it's not a replication? I hope that answered your question.
Well, you answered it better than I asked the question, so thank you.
I'd like to ask either Dana or anybody else on the staff. I'm sitting here trying to think. If we had something like this, I can't think of any applicant we've had yet that I can remember since I've been on the board that we would apply this policy to. Can anybody?
That
we would have made an exception for. I mean, now I know we just now got the deadline, but I'm just saying, if we had the fixed deadline, I can't think of anybody who's applied that if they have needed this, that we would have applied it to.
If I wanted to be.
But,
sarcastic, I would have said, great.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were going to say that, and you may be prophetic. I knew you would, we wouldn't have done that, though.
No, I was.
No, I know, but I knew, I'm telling you, I think he's going to say great.
John, correct me if I'm wrong, Dana can correct me, but I think we have had applicants that have submitted to open within about a 12-month period, which would suggest to me they had facilities in place. We have had a couple of those, and so we would have had no reason to apply it or really looked at it because we have the constant rolling. But I think the circumstance where I would anticipate this coming up most often is where a facility is involved.
Right.
Where someone said, we're going to have to enter into a lease. They're not going to enter into a lease and hold the property for us until we get the charter approved.
Right.
We can't wait that long or we're going to lose this particular facility. And that's the circumstance where I think it's most likely to come up that there would be a compelling need and you'd have a lost opportunity. I mean, I won't say that's the only circumstance, but that is, especially given the difficulty that our schools have finding facilities, that is the most likely way I think this comes up.
Yeah, Low Country Montessori might come closest to being the exception.
Maybe. But my point being, this isn't something that is going to affect a lot. Except, I typically would agree with you about policy on exceptions. But this is an exception, I think, to that because what I'm envisioning, Elliot, you can speak for yourself, but I think what in our conversations we're envisioning is that. I think we are at a point as a district that we're fixing to do some different things, going out recruiting operators. And we haven't been there. We've never recruited an operator. And so I think there's some exceptions that we can predict are coming down the road and that we need something to deal with. That's the way we've been kicking this around. And I guess my thought is that while you're right about suspending, we can do that. I kind of agree with Kathleen. That's a dangerous precedent. And I would rather not put Elliot and the staff, if they want to go out and recruit Kip to go to Allendale, to have to say, well, we can talk the board into suspending their rules. But say, okay, we can crack the window. And this one looks like one, based on our policy, we can get this window cracked for. But that won't then open the floodgates. And that is subjective. And so what I'm wondering is, just in listening to the conversation, Dana, the once a year isn't in here now. Isn't that right?
Right. It says it doesn't say that, so I would want to add that. I think our interpretation would be you don't meet the February 1 deadline. You do have to wait another year to.
And even if there's an exception, if we granted an exception, we're not going to do it twice during the year.
Right.
I mean, you do it, once a year is it. I like that. I would add 3/4 vote. I think that would show that this is something that's extraordinary. I mean, and that would add to the compellingness of it. You got to convince the board, 3/4 of the board, that that. I'm not proposing a motion yet. I guess what I'm doing is asking the board, would those be things we could do to tighten this up even more and still have a tool out there? Because that's what I'm looking at. I'm looking at it as a tool for recruitment, frankly. That's what I said.
I'm going to throw this out. I know I'm not a board member, but we're talking about just possibilities of the next draft. To accomplish what we've been talking about and to take this sole discretion, so kind of the onus is really on you all. We'd somehow have a vehicle, obviously, the Elliot staff to bring this to you, to your attention. It would be through the board meeting. What if we say this language where it talks about the board will not accept any applications submitted outside the application cycle unless, and then we have some language there about unless the superintendent or the staff has a recommendation to that the board depart from this rule, and then we can kind of flesh out. So you know that we do have sort of a gate. And it's the superintendent is going to be coming to you to make this case. It's not the applicant who wants to submit late. Mm-hmm. It's that it's been vetted with our superintendent, and he's going to take that risk, right, and come before you and ask. As in the past, you have been asked to do some things extraordinary or unusual, like loan money, like front money to a school, and then, okay, we know that they're, based on their student count, we're going to get, they're going to be paid out this much, we'll get it. And that's the arrangement. I mean, there have been, those things have been very unusual, very extraordinary, drastic kind of things, John, that you were mentioning. But I think that may be a possibility here to approach this.
Any discussion on this? Anybody see pluses or minuses to adding another layer to this, which is, first, it has to be a recommendation of the superintendent before we even talk about it.
To my way of thinking, that would have gone without saying.
Yeah. Does saying it help?
Well, or not? Say again?
We should say it.
Okay.
Why?
Because somebody may apply straight to us.
Okay.
May come straight to us. Bypass staff and come straight. Show up. Just show up.
Okay. So we would add language that specifies that the superintendent would bring such an exception to the boards for the board's approval.
If I may.
How do you feel about
it? Yeah, no, I think that's great. So for me, like, this addresses two things. Number one, like in the rare circumstance that there was just an absolute, Ben Simmons type five-star recruit out there, and for some reason
had to be an LSU guy.
I had to pick an LSU basketball player. We've got a little bit of flexibility in the entrepreneurial spirit of what we do as a charter school authorizer to accommodate that. If it's going to make, we can really predict that that is going to make huge impact on our kids. But number two. And this may be just an outlier my first 3 months, but I've witnessed the amount of time that the staff that this board has put into applicants that are being heard outside of the timeline. I saw that happen. And so I get questions about that, and I would like to just ensure that the existing policy meaningfully inserts the board into the decision-making process there in a way that's very, very clear. That the board is owning that decision to hear applicants outside of the timeline. Now, maybe the once a year thing gets to the resubmissions and that handles that. But I would anticipate a future where it could be that there are local applicants turned down by a local school board that could come to us. And I just think the clarity in that very first conversation to say this is the board's position, it's in our policy. Very, very difficult. We have deadlines. We operate within those. And it would take the superintendent's recommendation, a board vote, to even consider hearing you outside of this, right? I don't think that requires a second hearing. I think that'd be a pretty easy, if we're going to make the recommendation, it's going to be strong, and I would make it a very, I think, easy decision for the board to consider. So I think it helps on both fronts. I think it sends clarity outside this room to those who might think the door is more open than it is, that you can apply outside of the deadline, which right now I don't think it's clear to all the prospective applicants in our state and beyond what, our adherence to that rule. So I think this would make that very, very even clearer than it already is. And I think it would just give us leeway in the spirit of doing what's best for kids to allow for, under an extraordinary circumstance, this board to make a decision to allow a really high-quality operator in. Outside the deadline. So it's kind of both of those things. It's not just it is chiefly a recruiting tool, but it is also, I think, an affirmation of the existing timeline for those within our state and resubmission applications who want to come in afterwards.
Okay. Well, whatever we do, whatever we vote on, is it possible to get this rewritten to include exactly what the policy is going to say, and then vote on what we see rather than because
clean copy.
Clean copy.
Mm-hmm.
I personally would not think a 3/4 vote is necessary. If we think this in principle is proper, then it should stand with the way we normally approve. Because policy has a strange way of losing. When board members come and go, policy remains. And so some board 5 years from now looks at this, and they're not going to remember this discussion at all. And so I would not put the three-quarter vote in it. And I want to clarify, because we keep mentioning suspend the rules. My statement was not that we use suspend the rules for this purpose. My statement was that we could already do what this requires. And I mean, everyone knows suspending the rules is not a good thing to do except under exceptional circumstances. Now, this was presented as to provide for exceptional circumstances.
Right.
So,
but when you say we don't need to suspend the rules,
what's that?
That we could do this without suspending the rules?
No. I said we currently can do what we're trying to do with this by suspending the rules. Well, that was immediately interpreted by some of the board members as saying, okay, when we have these outside, we suspend the rules. No, because I almost never would vote to suspend the rules.
Right.
But to me, a deadline means a deadline.
Right.
And we have all kinds of deadlines. It's strange that we 1 minute are arguing that we need this deadline, and the next we're saying all the circumstances under which this deadline is necessary. But whatever, I'd just like to see a clean copy of whatever it is we're voting on, because there's several things that have been proposed that this be changed. The word quality, I don't know if that's in or out. And the last thing, I wish we could figure some way to put it in policy governance format. Maybe
I think we can. I think we can do that. Yeah, in fact, you're right. It should be done that way. In fact, if we insert the superintendent into it, I'm sitting here thinking, then we can simply do it that is there a gate? There's not a gate. There's got to be a way to do it. The superintendent shall not allow. I don't know. But it should be able to put in policy governance. Let me ask you all this. How critical is it from the staff viewpoint that this get passed next month? And I'm asking that because when we discuss the February meeting, we've got a consultant coming in for board development and everything, and we just can't get bogged down in this discussion in February. It would just not be time unless we stay here.
How many readings does it take, 2 or 3?
Two, right?
Two.
Yeah, two. I think it's two. We can always put off the second reading until March. No reason we can't do that, is there?
No. Not that
I'm okay with it.
Unless having it in place. Well, it's after February 1st. I mean, we meet after February 1st.
Right.
Was this talked about at all in the pre-application? No.
Training.
Yeah, we did have some sort of conversations with applicants, not as a group of folks saying, we really kind of wanted, Catherine sent out a survey to kind of, one of the questions was after the training, how do you feel, Catherine, correct me, I don't know how it was worded, like, do you feel like you're ready after hearing everything? Like, would you still go ahead and submit? And it was interesting. We've had some folks pull out, and then we've had some folks share with us that, wow, you know, they really want to get this February 1st deadline met, but they know they could have a much better application if they wait, and does it mean waiting another year? And I'm like, well, I would think so, because we've had issues with serial applicants. So, but it's great that people are thinking about that. They should be thinking. I mean, I've said to people, do not put your best effort forward. You do not want to put less than that. If you know you're not ready or it's just quite not there, I would encourage putting something less than my best.
If we got a clean copy today, couldn't we vote on it and then the second reading, we wouldn't argue the same points
right.
we've already.
Yeah, we could. The only thing I can think of that we can't get done today is getting it put in Carver Lane. That's going to take some thought. But
I've made most of the changes with a couple of questions. If y'all can help clarify a couple of points, that I can probably print a clean copy for y'all to look at.
But Don's raising another issue.
Yeah.
The Carver piece, I couldn't do.
I'm just trying to think if there's some way we could pass the policy and later revise it to meet. Huh?
Could we amend it the second?
Could revise it.
At
another time.
I mean, if it passes conceptually,
right.
then it's just a matter of
getting
the language.
Right.
Unless the policy governance framework changes the effective outcome of
right.
the policy,
that shouldn't matter.
It shouldn't matter.
Okay. Because the other thing I thought of, what we could vote on today, is the February 1st that we are interpreting that as meaning February, you know, that it's February
That's
1st.
That's an annual deadline.
Of February 1st. We could do that today and then deal with the rest of it, or I even like better, Ron, what you're saying, if we can get it cleaned up and retyped, then in a little while we can vote on it. Then here's what I know we're not going through the traditional amendment process here, so anybody wants to call me out. We will, but I think, so here's what I'm asking, Board. You're saying you don't care about the three-quarters vote.
I personally think it should either go through.
Or not. Okay.
No.
Okay.
And not, it doesn't need that signature.
Okay, then here's what I've heard that we'd like to insert in here, which has nothing to do with what we've been talking about, really, that once a year. Okay. And mm-hmm. Anybody? Yeah. Got heartburn over that? Okay. That we would like to insert in here quality, in case that wasn't meant. Yeah, okay. And then the third thing is that this could only be triggered by a recommendation from the superintendent. Those are the three things that I wrote down. Anybody else got anything that they thought needed to be done here?
I do like the three-quarters, but that's a high bar.
I kind of do,
and
too.
And it needs to be a high bar. Unanimity is, you know, that's, we only do that in church. And not very
what
often.
What church do you go to?
I think it makes
a statement.
Mm-hmm. The burden of proof is a lot higher.
Two-thirds vote for just about everything else in your policy manual.
I said three-fourths. I think it is two-thirds.
Two-thirds.
You're right.
That's still pretty steep.
Is that what y'all want to do? You want to do a two-thirds?
Let's do that and see how it comes. See it. Then we'll vote on that. We'll see if that's what we want.
Three-fourths vote is required to do two-thirds.
Now, policy itself, though, is just a straight vote to pass, right?
That's majority?
Yes.
Right? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
To change
policy.
Change,
right.
That's where the
deal, right.
Is it two-thirds of the full board or of the attending board members?
Those present and voting.
Right. Okay, so we y'all got it?
We'll look at it. We'll see how close I got.
Okay.
But I think we've got something close enough. The other thing I did is I, based on Kathleen's comment, at the very first paragraph, the last full sentence, this policy does not apply to applications to replicate or expand existing charter schools sponsored by the district.
Okay.
By the district.
Good.
To clarify, I don't agree with Kathleen or Lindsay or maybe both that raised the issue of whether that applies to transferring in charter schools.
Yeah.
I think that clarifies that.
Yeah. And if I may say, these are the kind of discussions I'd really like to see us have. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is making some decisions that are going, you know, things don't happen. This is great. Okay, then what we're going to do is suspend the discussion on that until the staff's got something ready for us. And Elliot will go to the...
Did you have something?
I'm sorry. Yep. Two things that I've got here.
Do we need to clarify its discussion?
Yeah. I think we did. That action item thing should have been said discussion. We talked about that.
That's right.
Or didn't we?
I think so.
Yeah, okay. First thing, February meeting. We've got, I'm having a brain cramp. Paul Meyer is coming back, those of you who've been around a while. He's a board governance, amongst other things, consultant who's helped us. Is this already it?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Consultant who's worked with us before in developing our adherence to and use of mostly the Carver methodology. We got enough new board members that he's going to do a review for all of us just on how the board's supposed to operate. And then we may get into some couple areas, too, that we need to further develop our policies, as we've done every time he's here. We've looked at a couple of areas, but it's also going to be a review. So it'd be good for all of us. Please try to be here, and I'll send something out to the ones who aren't, especially new board members, really need, because it helps us, helps you get a framework of how we do and what we do and why we do what we do and everything. So that meeting will probably start, because of his schedule, he needs to get out of town to be somewhere else the next day. So we're probably going to start that at 9. If anybody wants to come in the night before, that's fine. In fact, we've done that in the past, and we've had some pretty good board dinners that have been productive. So, if you can, that's not a bad idea. And then the other thing I thought we'd do in preparation for future board development stuff is talk some about the application hearing process. This addresses some of, but since they've already got this done, why don't we stay on this? That was more quickly than I realized I could do it.
So we just need that one day in February.
Just that one day, unless.
When have we talked about 2 days?
We had, but we don't.
That's March, isn't it?
Okay. We're working.
Yeah, we're going to probably carve out extra time in March.
We are on this
strategic plan.
Yeah, we may need to, because March we're going to be doing strategic plans, so we may end up, or did we end up with 2 days?
I had 2 days in February, but we did, because I had just blocked out what
right.
We talked about tonight.
Well, right now, March future 10th. Meetings are just March 10th.
Right.
No, we talked about some 2 days later.
I thought to hear, around the 24th or so.
To hear applicants.
Yeah, to hear applicants.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, you're right.
We don't have those dates yet.
We did.
We added them.
We'll review that.
I can. Laura's got it.
Before we leave today, can you remind us of all the future board meetings? Because we set some new ones?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I'll print them out.
Thanks. Okay, back to this. Let's everybody take a couple of minutes and just read it. Yeah, well, why don't we just wait? Yeah. Right. Okay, we'll go back then. As y'all know, we're constantly trying to upgrade our hearing process. The last time we kicked around, for instance, we talked about not using 30 minutes, not giving them 30 minutes. But giving them, I think, 15 is what we kicked around.
And we talked about that.
We talked about it. We didn't make a firm decision. What we did make a decision was that in the questioning process, that I would police that and keep it moving more quickly. But, so just, I'm looking for any other thoughts people have of what we could do to make our application slash hearing, but this is application, but especially hearing. How can we make these hearings go more smoothly and maybe even more expeditiously? Kathleen?
You mentioned your efforts to not necessarily limit, but at least control numbers of questions from board members, and I think perhaps we could agree, you know, on some maximum number of questions per board member.
Right.
And a suggestion might be, I mean, we all, the presentations generate questions.
That's right.
That don't come up through the reading of the applications. But we all kind of have our niche, if you will. So maybe one question in your particular area of interest or expertise, and if there is a question generated by the presentation, and that would be it. We could limit the applicant's response time to X.
Right.
And I think without diluting the importance of this document, I think we can delete the oral presentation slash commentary on the staff recommendations. We've all read it. Unless you have a specific question, if there's something you just don't understand, or something that you vehemently disagree with, you know, you think their education plan is horrible and the staff loves it. And most of us have been doing this for a while, so you, that kind of vehement disagreement, I think, needs to be addressed. But we could eliminate, you know, the few moments, and you can catch a few here and a few there. So
you're saying that let's just get the staff recommendation in writing?
In writing, yeah.
Okay. Elliot?
Yeah.
Is the staff with that?
No, I don't. I don't have a problem with that. I mean, we put it together for that reason, so you have it. I think we want to make it pretty clear and concise, and I don't think we need to rehash it.
I don't need it, and it may be, like I say, only a couple of 3 minutes worth, but...
That you're saving.
Yeah.
I'm
a million here and a million there, you know, pretty soon it adds up.
Sure. I'm not making a recommendation here, but I feel like I need to share feedback that we've heard from applicants. We
okay.
had this, like, full-day pre-applicant training, right? And so... one piece of feedback, and I think I just put it out there for the board's consideration, is that Trisha Owens is the one who brought this up, but others seem to applaud her in the room. Just said that, as you know, they're kind of in the gallery and they're listening to the board's discussion, and in their estimation, there have been times where the things said or discussed here that if they just had, you know, if you gave them a 3 minute and it's in one direction, but any clarifying, you know, comments that they would want to make, or if they've heard the board discuss something in a way where, you know, maybe we've heard something that they think is factually incorrect, or we just heard from the applicants, hey, we would love to have at least a shot at, and there are probably different mechanisms through which you could allow this, but if there was a clarifying point that they needed to make at the end or at any point, that they have the opportunity to do that. And I think the risk is you could really open the floodgates,
right,
and reopen a discussion. I think there are probably ways in which other boards and other authorizing bodies allow for that. And one resource that I'm offering for this authorization cycle is just an authorization expert. She's one of the best in the country. Her name's Beth Sealing, and she's actually going to come in and work with our team and act as kind of a coach and an evaluator at the same time. And I'd like to actually invite her. She's worked for KIPP. She's worked for, most recently, the Recovery School District in Louisiana. She worked with Arnie Duncan at Chicago Public Schools, all around charter authorization. She's someone we work with in the ASD, and she's also consults with other states, Mississippi and others, on their process. I'd really like for her to actually come and observe a hearing so she can, you know, she can give us some feedback on what she sees, and she's got recommendations around how we can make it better, that we hear those recommendations. So that wouldn't be for the first hearing, but
right.
It'd be for the next process.
I think that's great.
I just want to let you know.
Get somebody who's heard a lot of different things
mm-hmm.
and give us advice.
And I would say that's a good idea, but I'm just going to talk. Okay? I may ramble.
Okay.
don't see anything wrong with what we're doing now. To hear and hear what they have to say, ask what you have to ask, because whatever your vote should be backed up with what you have said. It shouldn't be a shock to you. And if I sit here and I don't talk and then there's a no vote, I'm walking away with not any input. But I don't understand it all. The application is reviewed by the staff with a template that has been approved by everyone, that is derived from the law, and you don't meet it. But yet you still have the opportunity to come here, and you hear nothing that addresses what the staff and the outside consultants, the experts, have said you're lacking. You hear nothing. They didn't pay any attention. They're going to come and do this and hope to persuade you, and I have a problem with that.
You don't mean it wasn't said. You mean they don't hear it.
They just don't change it.
Right, okay.
They pay no attention to it.
Right.
Or if there's something that they want to change, they change it. But it's not in the written application, and you are approving the written application, not what you said up here. Because the written application becomes the charter that you are responsible for. And I just don't understand that when the template has been discussed, I think, by who? The department, the alliance, everybody, it reflects the law, and you get one, or you get two, and the rest you don't meet. And there's no evidence in the presentation that you heard anything, or you changed anything. Or even if you did, I'm still sitting here with the application that doesn't represent the changes, and that's what I'm voting on, not what they're saying. So see, that's why you're asking questions.
Right.
And then, I'm sure they'd love to chime in, but they don't realize the more they talk, the worse it gets sometimes. They're digging their own hole. So, I mean, I take this very serious.
Oh, yeah.
And I've seen schools that made the children more victims, and it became a more employment agency for the adults. And I'm about good for the school, for the children. Not just doing it because there's a group of people back there who would love for that to happen for various reasons. But if you can't meet the simple threshold of what the law is requiring, why is there a shock? Why is there a surprise? I don't understand that. And the other thing, while we're talking about it, I worry about giving a person a charter for 10 years.
Yeah.
That is an awful long time to be messing up by the time you finally get to do something. I think there are all kind of opportunities to get it right, all the way through this whole process to get it right. And then you come and present what you present, and there's an issue with you. I don't get that.
Haven't we talked about part of the legislative agenda, trying to get a 5-year initial charter?
I remember you mentioning that several times.
I agree. In fact, I've said that to the legislature. This 10-year thing is nuts.
Didn't we do that? Or
it used to be 5 years.
Right, but did
facilities,
finances, yes. And also attracting some of the high players from out of that they wouldn't come here with that kind of business plan. Because that's what they're, you know, like a KIPP or whatever, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Those, and you know more about
that. Yeah, and we had 10 years.
But I know that we had reason for that 10-year thing. But I'm also with Betty on a couple, like, clarification after the point, after it's in writing and after the explanation and all. And if it turns out we need to do that, there needs to be a timeline on answering the question, because part of the issue in the presentation, quite frankly, is the quality of just the sheer presentation of the and the rambling.
That's the biggest thing I go on.
So unprepared.
Right.
if I were coming from a sales and marketing background, and that's what they're doing, they're selling their ideas to the state of South Carolina to back them in a venture, because that's what it is, to take a chance. And they're taking chances with these kids and with the state and federal money that we approve. It needs to be doggone near perfect. And with people, and we've all, I can think back to presentations where the paperwork was good and the presenter was so bad that you really thought about kids being around if these were the people that were going to be choosing the rest of the team and putting them out there for 5 years. So, I mean, it's a hard decision from the impact on the children. And I'm like Betty, I see a walking employment agency sometimes, and it's so obvious and it's just distasteful from the beginning. So I do see where we can make changes in the way that we ask questions, not because I think that we haven't done it really well, but because I think impression counts and our record counts on how it's done. And two questions, and a time on if we limit, and they know up front that their answer can only be that long, I think we would get clarity around the answers, or they would know they need to practice what they think the questions are going to be and be able to target it. I mean, I'm impressed with people that don't have to refer back to what they're doing and don't have to rely on something on this board, but can come in and talk about their community and be tight on their numbers. Tight enough to answer John's questions with a lot of clarity.
Yeah.
You know, but I've seen the looks on their faces when he asks questions, and that to me is a no
vote. That's scary.
It's a no vote if they don't, because we're giving them that money. I mean, well, we're not, but we're passing it on.
Yeah, John asked the kind of questions that, well, they stumble around and don't know the answers to. And the fact, I mean, and because the questions usually row in on are ones that they have a very, I mean, the answer ought to be 10 seconds, you know, and they stumble around. I used to, when I was doing consulting work to businesses, you know, just on my own, I would tell the CEO, I would ask three questions. First thing, rarely could they answer them. It was like, what are your gross margins, your EBITDA, you know, three. And I would tell them, you know, somebody will be able to walk into your house at 4 o'clock in the morning, shine a light in your face and say, what are these three things? And it ought to come out like that. If it can't, you need, you know, you got serious problems. And the questions you ask ought to be, and they are those kind of questions.
I agree with Lindsay on a couple of things. I really would like, you know, I'd be cautious about limiting the presentation. From the vantage point, these people, this is, for some of them, it's become their lives over a period of time, getting this idea together, whether they do a good job or not. And so I don't think the time we give them for the presentation is the problem.
Okay.
I think we have some bad presentations. I agree with that. But I think they should have the opportunity to try to sell us, to try to get their idea out there. And I also think, for the benefit of the people that are in the audience who do not have what we have in terms of the staff recommendation, I would like to have the staff say something, you know, limit the time, but say something as to what they've done and what their view of the proposal is.
Okay.
But I would like to work on what we do, and And the idea, I don't know, several made the idea of limiting the first round, the number of questions you can ask, and then have everyone get their, and then go back again, maybe. So you know, we used to have to preach, we don't have to do this anymore, but you used to have to preach and tell us, don't, our job is not to give them suggestions as to what they should do.
Right.
Our job is to get clarification. We seem to have improved a great deal.
We have.
Are those who were the worst are no longer with us.
Right.
But
attrition took care of
that. I would like to see if there's a way of doing a better job in what we do. And what Lindsay said, I really think they should be limited in their response to our question, because sometimes their response to the question is almost as long as their presentation.
You're right. So, and that's my problem.
So I think if we could really zero in on that and zero in on us, I think it would make a big difference in the amount of time.
Yeah, if I could just echo Ron said, I mean, I do think those are the conversations that wind up taking, you know, bring it, be concise, and Ron, you probably appreciate this. I mean, my interviews with Bro, they'll literally say, I got 20 questions for you, and we have 30 minutes, and so I'm going to ask you this question, and I need your answer.
Right.
You know, and they're testing my knowledge, like, can I tap into it, and can I deliver it with clarity?
And maybe we ought to do that. You say, look, you got 3 minutes to ask, you know, after 3 minutes, whatever the question is, we're moving on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, right, just to have it open-ended, I think that's probably the biggest kind of time creep, scope creep on these conversations. We can deliver a brief recommendation orally before you guys get going. But yeah, I think it is in the Q&A, the discussions with them, where it winds up taking a long time.
You know, the last group, some of them were infuriated because I said, it seems, I'm trying to identify what are your strategies for delivering on the primary issue, which I think was closing the achievement gap.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I see no specific strategy related to that. And they went all around. They never answered that question, but then they were mad because they said, it seems as though you want to do everything, but I don't see what specifically relates to closing the achievement.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes just not being able to galvanize your thought on what you're presenting with any specificity,
right,
that loses the support for your,
right,
and what Lindsay is saying, I think, is exactly right. They've got to come in here and sell this.
That's
if
right.
They can't sell it to us.
They can't sell it to the community.
Right.
I mean,
right,
they cannot sell it to the community once it, I mean, I know we get all this paper with all these signatures and all, but that represents a two-sentence blurb. Would you like life to be better for your child?
Right.
We got a school coming down the pipe. It does not sell.
Right.
I mean, I see those signatures. And
that's a good point, because I was telling Kathleen at the beginning of the meeting, I had one of the state's representatives call me about a school that we didn't approve, and they're coming back. And so I said, did you get this call? And she said, no. So he did his pitch that he was asked to do with me. And so I asked him, I said, well, let me ask you a question. Are you not concerned? And I raised this issue. He said, I got to be honest with you. I don't have any idea.
Yeah.
I was just asked to call you, and so I'm calling.
Yeah.
So
they don't know.
They write the little letter.
Yeah.
Right.
But when you get an application and they're calling it project-based learning.
Can you speak up just
learning,
a little louder?
No, I'm saying when you get an application, they call it project-based learning, but the materials is a project at the end of a chapter.
Yeah.
Or at the end of an activity. That's not okay. It's just simply not okay.
Right. I think when you hear people trying to buy time while answering to find the right answer, mm-hmm, you know that they really don't.
Right.
They don't know it. You know, that's what I've observed people doing while the board is asking the questions. They're sort of searching for the answer out
right.
loud.
Right. Or just hoping that they can talk so much.
Right. They're reading then your reaction, then they're going to what maybe is the next answer you want to hear.
Yeah.
When they should bring power and conviction to what they know is the answer, and they're standing up in their application and in the hearing. And I, my only push on the timing, and this is the board's decision, but I, for me, I mean, if you made it, if it's 30 and we're timing people out, I mean, I feel like if you had 20 minutes, if I had 20 minutes to make a case, and then I get a full Q&A and discussion too, so I'm really getting, you know, an hour with the board. But if it's, well, I'm going to give you 20 to highlight, you know, what's in your application, tells who you are, for me, that's an eternity. If I've got months and months to prep for that, in 20 minutes, I can tell you everything that you need to know. 15 might be a little tight, but if you're looking to buy time, I would just suggest that I think if you give them just a 20-minute one way, that's a pretty good amount of time to really hit.
Especially if they would understand, and maybe for the staff, this is helpful in talking to them, that their job isn't to go through the application. It's to tell us who they are, why they're here, and why they think they can do what they said they're going to do in their application. That's what
they're here. Read the application.
Yeah.
I'm not thoroughly convinced that every member of every charter committee has read his or her own.
Oh, I would bet on it.
I've been tempted to poll them.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That wouldn't be productive.
Right.
20 minutes.
But it would be illustrative.
That's right. It'd be interesting.
20 minutes for that type of presentation, think is. Nail on. When you said power and conviction, I thought about my favorite uncle who told me that was his guideline. He says, for a good preacher. Because if they get that 20 minutes, you ought to walk away with understanding everything about, I mean, if they can, and think how long it takes to prepare, or the knowledge base for that. And
it's a lot.
Is 20 minutes
an eternity?
A lot more.
The more effort you have to give.
I think so, too.
Some famous person wrote somebody a letter, and at the end said, I apologize for the length of this letter. I didn't have time to write a short one. Okay. Well, those are good.
While I was gone, did we talk about an earlier start time for application days?
Well, we normally look at, sometimes we do start at 9.
Yeah.
I think we just look at what we got. But, yeah, sometimes we look, and especially on the times when we
overnight,
and for sure we'll start. Yeah, but I think a lot of the things we've talked about will help me, and help us all. And what I'm doing is making notes, and I'm going to just kind of remind us and people, okay, yeah, here's where this is going to be. You know, so don't get upset if you're rambling. If I stop you and say, look, answer the question. You know, and on the other hand, if we're rambling, I'll tell you, what's the question?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's great. I appreciate that. And again, you know, anytime you get thoughts or anything, shoot me an email or something.
If we've kind of concluded that application control discussion, you also mentioned the legislative agenda.
Well, we need to vote on this. You passed us. Okay.
We just got a new one.
No, this is supposed to be different. Have y'all got revision or anything? tell us how we'll know the latest one.
Okay.
Two-thirds is
on.
It's
two-thirds
out
of the
numbers.
We did.
Outnumbers what? Right. Which one?
No. Yes, so that.
No, it's majority.
Yes.
That's the latest
this
one.
This is the latest
one. Well, we went to two-thirds.
One says two-thirds.
So which is the one that we're considering?
But I think
there may be a
majority, but should say two-thirds.
Let me
take these up.
Yes,
let's count them all.
Everything. Okay, here. Yeah, everybody, give Dana everything you've got,
including money, checks, credit cards.
Get some chocolates here. That can go a long way.
You have an infinity in dollars.
I don't know what the rest drive.
This meeting is getting environmentally negative.
Ron, when I was a senior in college and applied to graduate school, since it was political science, I was talking to advisor, you know, and he said, you know, you need letters of recommendation. Of course, he wrote me one, and I said, well, you know, I saw Bob's page. I'm sure he'll write one. He said, no, don't do that.
I agree.
And I said, really? He said, yeah. And I said, why? He said, don't ever get a letter of recommendation from a preacher or a politician, because neither one of them ever say anything bad about anybody. And you know what? That was good advice.
Probably, yeah.
He said, no politician going to say something bad about somebody. So I followed that rule the rest of my life.
Don, do you want me to knock this out while we wait?
Okay. Elliot's going to do his report.
Okay. Well, Happy New Year, everyone. It's kind of a new day, new year. It's my first time sitting here without my colleague, Wayne. So it kind of feels like a new day in some respects. I want to share a quick personal story that reminded me of the importance of high expectations for kids, where I didn't follow my own rule. My son is, like, particularly frail. He's got anxiety issues. He's actually on a 504 plane because he gets kind of scared in certain situations, but he loves basketball. And so, but he can't really play yet, you know, but he loves to get out there and try. And so we got him a basketball hoop for our driveway, and he could not hit the side of our house if that was his target. But he came into the year, and his birthday was in October, and he said, I'm setting a goal, and I'm hitting a three-pointer this year. And in my head, I thought, there ain't no way. You're hitting threes. And he's just a little guy, having just turned 11. Well, he's in a league in West Ashley, and I went to his game last night, and he nailed, I'm talking nothing but net, in a game,
all right,
his second three-pointer in a row this week.
Whoa.
Yes. And he was like, pumping his fist, and his team won by 2 points. So, I mean, that was a critical basket.
Yeah.
And I was so proud of him, and I've been thinking about that all week. And it also just reminded me, and when the moment in which he told me that, I bet he could read on me my own doubt, and
right.
I hope it fired him up.
Right.
But I should have been like, man, you're going to be the best three-pointer there is by the end of this year. So anyway, I'm just really happy for him, and it just reminds me of what kids can accomplish.
How long ago did he set that goal?
He set it in November.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. When he turned 11, he said, this year, I'm hitting a three. And so, yeah, and he just got out and practiced. We backed our car out of the driveway, and he's out there for hours taking shots. Now he's hitting them. So I'm really proud of him, and it just makes me think of our own kids and what we believe in them. So just a quick reflection. You know, I brought an entry plan to the board a few weeks into this position. There were a few things I really wanted to do in my first 3 months. I wanted to just get smart about what y'all are doing here, build relationships, data-wise, really know which schools are high flyers, which ones are in hot water, have conversations about that. I feel really good 3 months in that most of that has happened. You know, I've probably got some hits and some misses, but, you know, in terms of the hits, I really feel like I've gotten into the schools. I've visited almost every school. I think there's about five remaining that I haven't gotten into yet. The three schools that are in the hottest of water, staff and I have visited those schools, met with their boards, their school leaders, set expectations for them this year that we expect them to meet and that they agreed to meet. And we're going to visit those schools this spring. And then we've got the ball rolling on, you know, just visions around how we improve key processes. Our authorization decisions, in my opinion, are probably the most important thing, I think, as an organization that we do. It's that high bar at authorization and who we let in that we can then turn loose. And if we don't get it right there, everything else becomes much more difficult. And I appreciate all the board's commitment to that, and I hear it in your discussions. And I would just remind you that if you look at our data, not just in our state, but our district mirrors this, fewer than half of our kids are on grade level, ready or higher on ACT Aspire in both math and ELA. It's in the 40s, right? Which means the majority of kids being served by our schools right now are not ready in math and ELA. Our average ACT score is a 17.6. Okay, 21 is college ready. That's in our district right now. And I would just remind you, for African-American students, it's a 15.2. It's a 15.1 in our state. And so when I hear you read our mission statement, you say that we are going to assist in the educational improvement of our state. I firmly believe that. That's our responsibility. Let's get it right in our own schools, and then let's push and compel greater achievement across our whole state. If our charters are doing right, they're going to do that, because local districts will see people voting with their feet, choosing charters. Our schools will compel, I think, the schools around them to be even better. So this year, I just really want to now, if I'm 3 months in, and I want to zero in on authorization and make that process. Let's iterate on it. And, you know, coming into next year this time, have an even better application together with our State Department friends and Mary at the Alliance. I really want to simplify this application. I want the application to get at the heart and soul of the people who are going to be serving kids. And I think right now there's just a lot of detail that's unnecessary. There's a lot of work that doesn't really get in the spirit of greatness in running schools. So I look forward to working with the board and the staff on that. Let's make an even better application. The second thing is our responsibility. Once we bring schools in, I think we need to be great at equity and access and making sure all kids are served, regardless of their need. We don't see that right now in every single school. I don't believe that that is happening. And so I believe that our schools more and more need to represent their communities. And we just need to make sure they're getting right with family and student rights and serving every student that comes. I don't think there's any malice intent where it's not happening. I think there's just the word might not be out in all communities that the school is even there. I think they need extra help with serving kids, and I think they're operating on a dime when they need a dollar, frankly, with resources, and it's really hard to do what they're doing. So I think we can help them more there. And then the final thing I really want us to get great at is, what other actions can we take on an annual basis that are going to help kids as an authorizer? And to me, we need to have a growth mindset as an authorizer and set our great schools up to serve more kids. And that can either be they're going to add grades, it could be they're going to add schools, right? In the ASD, we were really clear about if Green Dot or Aspire or a local operator wanted to do this, if they're proven, I want to make it easy for them to serve more kids and add more campuses. So I think big when it comes to replication, because we got great people right here in the state of South Carolina, some of whom just have never even thought about, well, how could I make a second great school in my community or in another city or in a rural area of our state? And so I look forward to this year kind of codifying our approach to that and how we make it easier and have a clear pathway for replication. That's the number one factor for great nonprofit charter operators to consider when they move into a new state is, what is our opportunity for growth? And right now, I don't know how I can answer that policy-wise with us or others. We really think in terms of one-site charters in our state. And I think we could be a leader as an authorizer around thinking big. If you're a great operator and you're doing great work, we should allow you, make it easy and not hard for you to serve more kids. So those are some of the things on my radar as we head into this year. I remember my interview, I was asked about my belief on whose role is it to advocate for our district with the legislature? And I can't remember which one of you said. I would see you as the chief lobbyist. Well, I got my first taste of that yesterday, my first budget hearing. I was really been giving this a lot of thought and preparing for this. And it went really, really well. Met with the House committee, the Chairman Bingham, Representative Erickson, and others, and on our budget. And we had a very vigorous discussion about the purpose of our work, and it seemed like, you know, the notes were ringing with them and the things that I was saying, and they were very, very supportive, seemed very, you know, favorable, their discussion around our work and their support for our work. And so just, you know, when you're presenting to a committee and you're having a discussion, you kind of tell this is resonating with them, and that's definitely how it felt. So I feel good about that. I went to Representative Erickson's office afterwards, and she said, hey, I could tell that Bingham was really kind of vibing off of what you were saying, and that was great. And so I just wanted to share with you. Full steam ahead on our budget. I brought to them a $12.9 million increase request for this year, representing simply our growth. And I framed it as, I'm not here representing an office, I'm here representing the families that are demanding our schools, of which there are many, many more every single year. And so I'm asking you to just simply fund the growth that parents are demanding. And I didn't ask for a per pupil increase. I supported the Alliance. Just, you asked about legislative, I heard you talk about legislative agenda. The Alliance is bringing forward a facilities funding request of $300 additional per pupil for charter schools. I fully support that. I think that's a good idea. Other states do that as a mechanism for funding charters and helping charters to get facilities. It adds up to about $7.9 million. I've already seen where facilities have gotten in the way. Marshall Carver let us know just a day ago that they're out of the game. They couldn't find a facility in North Charleston. And from everything I've heard about them, they were going to be an awesome charter operator. And as a native of Charleston, I can tell you that is a place that needs great schools, North Charleston. And so I think about them, and I think about others who might want to come in the state or grow within the state. And facilities are probably the biggest funding gap for them right now. And so I'm supporting that $300 increase per pupil, which would really help our schools out. I want to think big about next year and the legislative priorities for next year. And I think I'll be in a better position for me being 3 months into the job to stand up. And, you know, the virtuals asked me to support an increase for them, and others have asked for certain increases. I feel like I need at least a year in before I can go big and ask for more money per pupil. Frankly, I can't stand up right now our results compared to the state and what our schools are currently doing and say we need more money per pupil. I would rather do that in a way that's got a little history behind it and where we can point to some greater success and to just a different way to fund charter schools. I'd rather just, it's not about the per pupil anymore or the proviso. It's about a formula. It's about a flat millage where the money follows the child statewide, including our schools. And so those are the kinds of things that if I'm really going to push the legislature to change the ways in which they fund charter schools, I'd rather go that route. And I feel like in my first year, if I can get them to just feel good about what we're doing, support the proviso and this facilities increase, that I feel like we're doing pretty good there. So wanted to give you the update on the budget. And we're starting internally now to develop the budget. We are going to have teams really pause and reflect and say, what is the purpose? I don't want to bring a tight prescriptive template around, you know, accounting codes as the first thing we do as a team to think about how we use our money. I want us to stop and say, what is it that we're trying to do? What is the purpose of our activities, our people, our staffing, vis-a-vis the vision of our organization, the impact we're trying to make? And then from there, talk about what activities support that, how much they cost. And we're going to build our budget out that way, bring it to you just as we have before. But I just want you to know that's starting to percolate. We're having internal discussions about our budget. Marshall Carver, I mentioned, happy to answer questions if you have any about that. And other news about just charters in our space, either exiting or coming in February, we're going to hear Felton Lab Charter School. They're going to come next month. And for budgeting purposes, we need to tell the legislature it's lock, stock, and barrel. These aren't just projections. You know, we know we've got this student count, so we really need to tell them if Felton's with us or not. I will tell you, I visited the school. We've looked at their data. It's pretty impressive. I liked what I saw there. But I'll make a recommendation to you on the transfer next month. But you'll be hearing them next month, and we'll try to keep that as tight as possible, Don. I know we've got other things planned for that agenda, but they're putting everything together.
Remember, we're going to need big hearings and all on these schools. We're not planning on anyway having hearings around these couple of transfers.
Right, and there may be another.
But we're going to need to. That's going to be a full day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they won't submit.
It's not like that, right? Because especially if they've been doing work for a while, they've got an extensive track record, and they're coming over in that way versus a new operator for which we don't know anything. So you may hear a couple of transfers next month, and then Oceanside's. Oceanside's is a group that was authorized by South Carolina State to open in the Mount Pleasant area this coming fall. And as you know, South Carolina State has notified everyone that they are pulling out of the authorization business. They're no longer going to be an authorizer. Kenny Bingham had, you know, some opinions on this and was voicing them yesterday in committee.
What did he say?
You'd have to ask him.
I couldn't come to Columbia for the meeting.
Sure.
Would you please tell me what Representative Bingham had
yes,
to say?
I can't remember everything, but yeah. He voiced his support for our district being, you know, really the kind of the district that's aligned with the legislature and the state around authorizing charter schools, and had opinions around higher ed institutions
right.
authorizing charters and how that could be funded. And you know, and it's on the record. He suggested that higher ed institutions should fund their charters the same way a local district does. and that they shouldn't be funded through the state in the same way that we are. That was his opinion. So they kicked that around. All this to say, Oceanside will likely bring some kind of formal requests, I would anticipate, in the next couple of months to us, just because they're in a bind. They were set to open this fall. Now they likely don't have an authorizer, so I would anticipate that Oceanside would approach us. I haven't met with them. I don't have any. There's no formal request, but one will likely come your way.
Do y'all know who they are?
Yeah. What was the name?
That's great. That's great, Collegiate.
Gray Collegiate.
That's the one we turned. They came to us as what? Low Country
Collegiate.
Low Country Collegiate.
And they did, okay, I didn't know.
And
that.
So then they got authorized by SC State to open this fall.
This group is very supportive of that approach. And okay. You wouldn't know that because you weren't here at the time.
No, sir.
But I was hoping you would also include in your superintendent's report that one of the top basketball schools in the Midlands is a charter school, one of our charter schools, who came back from a 12-day Christmas vacation, and now they're playing in a tournament in Hawaii,
okay.
and will play in another tournament in Philadelphia, and so sooner or later someone's going to ask the question, when are these kids in school? But they are the number two rated basketball team in the Midlands.
I hear you.
I just like to remind
them.
Maybe they've got a staff of tutors that travels with the team.
Hey, maybe they do.
Could be. Yeah. So I just wanted to give you a heads up on that. You may hear about that, but that's all that I have. So happy to answer questions if you have any about anything I've said.
Kathleen?
A couple things that you reminded me of.
Yes, ma'am.
The three schools that the visiting teams went to see, I thought I remembered you saying that you would share those recommendations with us. I would like to see them. I don't know if anyone else is interested. Just to see, you know, kind of, because I've been here for all of them. And I just, you know, I just want to take a look.
Sure.
So that's a request.
Okay.
And you mentioned SC State.
Mm-hmm.
Their letters of intent were redirected to us.
That's correct.
Understand that correctly? Mm-hmm. So now we have 41 potential applicants instead of 31.
I think some of those also were applying to us. They're applying to both, so I'm not sure.
We have 29.
Oh, yeah, because some dropped out of the okay, so we're looking at 29. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Three of the seven, and Kathy Cookie, if I'm wrong, letters of intent that went to SC State are from groups that had also applied to us for the same cycle.
Oh, so there was a duplicate application. Letters of intent.
Letters of intent.
So we're not looking at quite the almost the same number as we were looking at last month. Considering people who dropped out and people who added in.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me, that's still a daunting challenge. 30, even if we only get half of them.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be awful.
Is there any mechanism to request from the legislature an exemption of the 90-day window? I'm just asking.
I think we need some relief somehow, or either some ability for there to be a step between them making an application and getting a hearing. It seems to me that there ought to be, I mean, if staff looks at a group and just knows they're not going to be able to do it.
But if
we're going to the legislature, maybe there's something we can do there.
I don't know. I mean, it is in statute, the 90 days.
Yeah.
It would be a statutory issue.
And it is in statute that they can have a hearing.
Yes.
So it seems to me there's two things there we can look at, the 90 days and...
Which brings me back to the additional considerations for a legislative agenda, neither of which... I think will be accomplished this year, but I think if we can make, a pretty good case that it's just, it's almost physically impossible to do it within the 90-day window.
Right.
And if people disagree with me, please say so, but it's almost physically impossible.
Oh, I would think you got unanimity on that. Would you agree? Yes, he is, yeah.
Well, you know, and you mentioned, you know, our agenda with the legislature is what it is, and I think wisely so, limited to some degree. But once you, you know, have developed, you know, further relationships with these folks, I would like to see those two things addressed. And the third thing might be transportation.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
That's a bigger item there.
Yeah.
But
I don't think I would call us selfish to make that request. I think I would call us realistic.
Yeah, no.
You're right.
Let's talk about it. What would be realistic?
I don't know. And we may never have another year, you know, of new charter applications like this year. I mean, this is.
Well, we've had some years in the past, though, that taxed us pretty heavily.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah. Would 180 days be unreasonable?
I think the legislature might consider that unreasonable. Yeah. Maybe somewhere to 120 days. If we have another month, we can schedule at least two meetings, maybe three if necessary.
Yeah. I think 180.
I think that's a little.
Yeah. That's pushing it.
I think it's pushing it.
But going at it with another month, I think that's reasonable.
And we don't, you know, we don't have to use it if the numbers don't
that's
justify
right.
it.
Yeah, I would support that.
What do y'all think about it? It seems to me that it's. I mean, I know why they've done it, but the problem with legislation starts being so specific. I mean, like the process. When anybody can get a hearing, well, I mean, that opens us up to some really bad hearings. And I know a lot of, I mean, I'm just for some reason popped in my mind the process at the BAR in Charleston, the Board of Architectural Review, which is really, really strict because of historical stuff. I mean, these people are like dictators. But you can send something to them, and at a certain level, and I'm not sure how they've got this, you know, how they make the decision, but at a certain level, it's just a staff thing, you know, and then it escalates up to a board thing, you know, and so I just thought about the way we could do something like that.
Available to us, and it's not exactly the same, is that, you know, if an application is not considered complete, it stops there in the process. But I guess even that group could request to come before us.
Well, Dana, Kathleen was just saying that if an application comes and it's not complete, that kind of stops it. But can they still come before us?
Could they still come before us?
We've not had any applicant group because the application guidance, fortunately, is very specifically provides for that an incomplete application. It states that an incomplete application will not be considered.
Okay.
So that's the support. And every applicant that we had this conversation about that this was incomplete, you were missing sections, extra, you know, whatever, has readily accepted that. Now, that same group, though, without this policy that you're going to be voting on, could just have said, okay, well, we'll send this to you.
Okay.
And one thing I have concern, and I'll raise it, Eric, and I've had some conversation, and Catherine and Elliot, is that there is also guidance in that document that says that the potential sponsor can accept additional information. And it doesn't really provide a timeline, so we're just going to have to.
Does it say you have to accept it?
They can get a hearing, but you can decide what that hearing looks like.
Okay.
So, you know, as you talk about it, you know, one thing that you might consider is, from a scheduling and process standpoint, you know, bucketing the applications into incomplete versus complete. And, you know, if you have someone who submitted an incomplete application, you know, you may schedule them for less time to explain why they should be permitted to open, even though they've submitted an incomplete application. And that might be a much shorter conversation than a complete application.
Yeah, that'd get hard.
Yeah, I don't like having structuring different hearings for different applications.
The statute permits, you know, says that they're entitled to a hearing.
Right.
So, you know, you have to provide them that time. Well, that doesn't mean that you know, if you have.
Well, we don't have to ask any questions, and then in 20 minutes it'll be over with.
That's right.
You know.
Yeah.
Any questions?
We've lost 20 minutes, but.
Right. And the other thing, though, is, like you say, so far, if you've gone back to them and say it's incomplete, they've
accepted that.
Yes.
Moved on.
Yes, they have.
Yeah.
Okay. Well.
But I do. I think if we could get another month, that would be good.
Yeah.
That.
Is it possible to, once we have the group of folks who are at the step just prior to a hearing, or maybe even earlier in the process, could we ask any of those groups if they would be willing to wait till outside the 90-day window? I don't know if we can ask a group that. Okay, Eric's shaking his head. All right,
just don't do it.
Okay.
The consequence is just too extreme. If you don't ask within 90 days, they get a charter.
But I was thinking there might be some way to memorialize
right.
some
even if you
MOU or something. Okay, no problem.
I just recommend
it. I like the creativity, though.
I'm just beating my head against the wall here.
There are a lot of things in that law that show, and in the way this board was first, you know, the first board, what happens when zealots get something done? Because they never considered anything other than anybody who wanted to start a charter school were wonderful people who ought to be able to do it. And
you know who the authors of that legislation
are. Oh, I know, yeah. I know. And I read something the other day about something, the most dangerous thing in the world was, you know, well-meaning zealots with no understanding. And that was not an exact quote, but I thought about our situation then, because that's what we're up against, is this presumption that they all probably are
great.
Yeah, right. But I think if you might ask around, and John, you and Representative Erickson talk, right? Hello, friends. why don't you ask her? Could you run this problem by her?
Just do it.
Oh, you just okay. Great. Yeah.
I'll talk to you.
I don't think it's too late. I think we can ask for that.
Right. Because it really is a real problem. I mean, you see it. And okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Nothing else needs to be said. Okay.
Okay.
Then let's. Can
about
we?
The policy.
Are you through?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Let's move
Thank
back
you.
Now. About policy. Y'all could fire me for lack of proper parliamentary procedure here today.
That was a practical.
None of us.
He would love for us to fire him.
It's not that easy, Don.
It's not that easy.
Yeah, I've tried worse things than this. Okay, now let's read this. Take 2 or 3 minutes. Let's.
So are we still considering this document our first reading?
Yes.
Okay.
Well.
Wait a minute. We had the.
We had a motion to adopt the original document.
Right.
A motion and a second, and we had discussion.
So we have to do something with that.
Yeah, so that has to be disposed of.
Okay.
She can't pull it because it's been seconded, right?
That's correct.
Okay, see, I was thinking we were just letting this be the first, but you
wouldn't. Yeah, I don't understand. understand why.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we substitute this document for the one that was originally proposed for acceptance for first reading.
I second that motion.
Okay. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Okay, thanks. Okay. Been moved and seconded. So any more discussion on this? Okay. All in favor of the policy, this is for first reading. As you've got in front of you, please say aye.
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 Opposed, no.
No.
Okay. Second reading. According to the agenda, the second reading may be in March, but although the second reading should go really fast. Okay, so we'll probably be in February. Okay.
Now, you were going to get us dates. I just want to sure everybody knows the calendar coming up. This is what we did at the last meeting.
So what we did, if you notice, what we did, we added a second meeting in March, but it's 2 weeks after the first meeting, and then in April, we've got back-to-back meetings. Okay? If there's nothing else, then I'll entertain.
I've got a question.
Yeah.
April 14th and 15th, is one of those days our normal day for April?
Yeah,
so there's just one extra day.
One extra day.
Okay,
that's
so these
right.
These aren't 3 days in April.
No. Yeah, this is everything.
Yeah,
right.
We contemplated one as an overnighter and it'd be the next day. The
right.
Other day would be spread out.
Right. And remember, February the 11th, next meeting, we are going to start at 9. So if you need to make any sorts of accommodations for that, feel free. Nothing else, I'll entertain a motion that we adjourn.
So move.
Okay, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Great. Okay. So even though we didn't have much on the agenda, we spent this time well today.
Yes. I wish we had more opportunities and things.
You're adjourned, right? Yeah, we're adjourned.
Just that kind of